This is the Protect Help Give Show with JM Ryerson.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Protect Help Give. I'm really excited to interview this person today because she is really leading the charge. Author, speaker, thought leader, and money educator Ande Frazier has made it her mission to break down the emotional, behavioral, and societal barriers that stand between women and strong financial foundations. She regularly appears on top national media outlets to speak about topics at the intersection of women and finance, and she has been named one of the top 100 in finance in 2019 and top 50 women of 2019 by Top 100 Magazine, as well as one of Bristol's Who's Who among distinguished professionals and executives. In addition, she is the Gold Stevie Award winner for Female Executive of the Year for 2019. Her book, Finally or Financially Free, 11 Conversations to Have with Yourself About Life, Money, and Worth, published by Forbes Books, is now available on Amazon as well as other online booksellers now. That is quite a resume. Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Yeah, it's a lot of been busy lately. Let's put it that way.
The accolades have been piling up. My goodness, that's pretty remarkable. So congratulations on all of your success. Tell me your journey into the financial service world.
Well, you know, I guess I have kind of a rather interesting journey. I really didn't have any aspirations of being in the financial business. I wanted to be in fashion. So this is kind of as far as you can get from that. But when I was in college, my dad, he was a career changer. He was a Southern Baptist minister while I was growing up and had branched into the area of financial planning and wealth management a few years before I graduated from college. And felt like it was a real extension of his ministry. And so when I was getting ready to graduate, he said, you know, you really ought to think about at least, you know, coming into business with me. Really, our business isn't just about numbers. It's about building relationships and helping people. And just through kind of ongoing discussions that we had, I ended up joining him right out of college. So I entered the financial industry back in 1993, you know, really just fresh right out of school a few months later, and have really enjoyed it and have had an opportunity to kind of be in different roles throughout the industry and to do different types of work and to really learn a lot, which I think contributes to the way that I work with clients now.
Well, it's very cool. And obviously in that time, so 1993 to now, I imagine I've been part of it for, well, it's going on 17, 18 years now. There has been a radical shift in how prevalent and how much women are truly leading the charge in the financial service world. What's been your experience? Because obviously you've kind of spearheaded a lot of that, and thank you for doing that. That's amazing. But what's been your experience from 93 to now with that?
Well, you know, in 1993, when I joined my father, we were in a small southern town northwest of Atlanta, and there weren't a lot of professional women in the area. A lot of the women had regular kind of jobs, but there weren't a lot of attorneys or there weren't a lot of financial people at all in the town. And so to have someone like myself who not only was in that level of industry, but also was young, you know, I was in my early 20s when I was wanting to talk to people about their money. And so it certainly was an interesting time to navigate. Having people take me seriously, being able to talk with them about things that I had not yet experienced or had time to experience for myself. And so it certainly was a growing experience for me to be able to learn how to navigate that, but feel like that it really allowed me to be able to, you know, feel those challenges and accept them and learn a lot about myself and learn a lot about what other people really care about and what they need to hear from their financial planner or advisor. And so I think overall, it really helped me to kind of formulate who I am today. But there weren't a lot of women in the financial industry back then. And even now, we're just now seeing the numbers start to, you know, go to a different place. I think we're still, you know, less than 20% in the industry, but back then it was hovering, you know, early teens, maybe around 10 to 15% at most. And so what I'm excited about now is we're seeing more women are interested in being in the industry. They recognize that it's about building relationships, and there's a lot of different types of family dynamics and people skills that you need to have to be successful in this industry. So I'm excited about what I'm seeing, and hopefully I've been a part of putting at least financial planning on the minds of those young women who are considering making a career in this business.
Well, I think there's no doubt you have. You'll be pleased to hear that at least our company, if you look at our leaderboard, it's about 50-50 when it comes to male and female. So we have kind of been that on that path for a while. But I guess my question would be, not just to women, but to males and females. You talked about being young and having people take you seriously. What's your best piece of advice for those that are starting? Like you said, you start in your early 20s. Some of these kids, I mean, they are kids almost at that time when they come in. What's some of the best advice you can give them so people do take them seriously when they're trying to sit down and help these families?
Well, I think the first thing is to make sure that you're listening and you're asking really good questions. You know, so often in this business, we want to tell people what to do, or we have, you know, knowledge that we want to share with them, which is important. But I think also we have to listen to what's important to them. What is the purpose for them around having money? What do they want to do with it? And so asking really good questions and getting skillful at asking good questions will allow you to not only allow them to discover for themselves what they need to be thinking about and doing, but it will also buy you some time to be able to level set the relationship when you're going in. So asking great questions, I think certainly going and getting education, whether it be financial designations like I have, you know, a lot of them, certainly does add some credibility, passing your licensing test and going and doing some of that extra training in the beginning will give you more knowledge to be able to talk to the things that might come up. And so I think giving yourself some patience and grace, but also make sure you're not, you know, just taking for granted what you have an opportunity to do. You have an opportunity to change somebody's life by helping them with their money. And so that requires you to understand, you know, different ways that money works and the rules and regulations around that. And so good people skills coupled with good financial education, I think will allow you to feel more credible. And that goes a long way towards being more confident in those situations where you may feel like they're not taking you so seriously.
Yeah. One of the things you mentioned is what is the purpose of the money? And that is such an important question for people to ask. And I really hope people take that seriously. My question would be specific to, I remember in my early 20s, it was really, I took it because there was no cap on commissions. I didn't understand the importance of what we really did until I had that moment. Did you have a specific moment or that aha moment where you're like, holy cow, what we're doing is really important?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I kind of wrote about this in the book. I had very early on, I met with a woman who came into my office. In the book, I call her Sally. That's certainly not her real name. But she came into my office and she was really struggling. And you could tell that she, you know, had apprehension about even being there and the conversation that we were going to have. And one of the things that I found is that she had gotten into this kind of vicious cycle of spending money on things that she didn't necessarily need, but that she felt like she should buy to kind of keep up with her friend group, if you will. And so she would spend money to kind of look a certain way to friends or to people in the town, or to feel a certain way when she would have something new, or go to a certain place and be able to talk about it. But then she would get into debt and then she would just feel bad because she was incurring all this debt and it wasn't allowing her to reach her true financial goals. And it was this vicious cycle of getting in and out of debt, in and out of debt, never really getting ahead. And kind of as we were talking, what I discovered is that she had this subconscious, you know, unaware voice in her head that was kind of causing her to stay in that pattern. And in the book, I call this a money maxim. It's a sentence that kind of keeps you stuck and it might keep you either proving or disproving whatever it is that's going on. So for her, her money maxim was, I am inadequate, I am unworthy. And so in her mind, she felt inadequate. So she would buy things to feel adequate, but then she would feel unworthy of being able to have the financial resources and obtain the goals that she wanted. started. And it was this kind of cycle of bad behavior in terms of her money that, you know, goes. And as we started to break this down and she started to become aware of it, and a lot of it is about being aware of what's happening and just giving consciousness to what it is you're doing, we were able to kind of break that down and give her some things that she could do when she felt this kind of coming up, and new ways of being and new techniques and skills that she could develop to help her get out of the cycle. And I think it was during that process that I recognized that, you know, money is so much more than math. It's an emotional topic. You know, I meet with people all the time where money can be a joyful thing and it can be a fearful thing and it can be a scary thing and it can be an exciting thing. And, you know, a lot of things go with it, including a lot of major life moments. And so when we deal with people and help them with their money, we have to recognize that it's way more than math. And finding their true purpose and what they really want to do and accomplish is part of that discussion, so that when they're making their financial decisions, they know that it's helping them, you know, take part in something that they want in their life. They're, you know, able to spend more time with family and friends, and, you know, whatever, pursue a passion, adopt a child, whatever it is that they want to do. And it's that that causes this business to be so rewarding for me and for many others, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting. I mean, we basically are, we could have our psychology degree when it comes to this. And what you're talking about, I really took as the relationship with money that Sally in this instance has. And I think we all have a relationship to money, good, bad, or indifferent. How do you uncover that? I guess maybe it's quickly. I don't know if that's the right word, but how do you uncover that with your clients? Because I think that's really pertinent to whatever direction you take them in, is that relationship with money.
You know, a lot of people will tell you to go back in your childhood and think about all the phrases that we heard as, you know, growing up as children about money. Some of the ones I heard were money doesn't grow on trees, or money is the root of all evil. And those phrases certainly do impart a particular point of view that we as children have and not even know that we really have. But I think you have to go a little bit deeper. I encourage people to figure out that time in their childhood when they recognized that money meant something more than just a medium of exchange. You know, and when that happens, sometimes we add a story to it. We make money mean something more than what it was intended to mean. And what happens is we go through our childhood with the story we made up about money, only to wake up as adults having to make real financial decisions. And then we wonder why we struggle. And so what do? We immediately get into action. We read all the how-to books. We ask our friends, where do we invest? How do we invest? And we get into action only to not stay consistent with it for very long, because we don't really understand why we're doing what we're doing. And so one of the things that I do a lot with people is I have them kind of break all this apart and go back and look at, when was that first money experience where you recognized money was something more? And what did you make it mean? And is that really true and valid? And what evidence do you have to support that now? And instead of jumping into how to, I think it's important to really understand the why. You know, what is it that you really want to accomplish? And why is that meaningful and important to you? And so that goes back to them identifying their values as adults, both for themselves, and if they're in a couple, they might do that exercise together. And then what are their goals that they want to, you know, choose for themselves that are really personal and meaningful to them, not just goals that other people have told them they should have. And once you identify your values and you pick goals that are really anchored to those values, then when you get into action, you have a better success rate of actually following through on that, because you know why you're doing what you're doing. And so when there's a temptation or something out there that comes up, you can process that decision with much more logic and rational clarity than you might if you didn't know why you were doing it in the first place.
I love that you're getting to the root and you're really figuring out why. And I have not had a chance to read your book. Congratulations, by the way. That's awesome. 11 conversations to have with yourself about life, money, and worth. What was the impetus? What made you want to write this book?
Well, you know, it kind of goes back to what I just mentioned a minute ago about the how. There's a lot of how-to books out there. I mean, there is a plethora of blogs, podcasts, radio shows, you know, TV shows, books, everything out there telling people what, where to put their money and what, how to put their money somewhere and what to do with it. But there's not a lot that really talks about what you need to do before you even get there. And so this book was really written to be the book you read before you read the how-to book. And the 11 conversations do kind of branch into two different areas. The first part of the book really dives into, you know, what happened is in our childhood about money, what is our relationship, then how to think about money as an adult. I'm a big believer in people taking personal responsibility for everything that they do in their lives, and that certainly includes money. And then the second part of the book dives into some high-level discussions about the five major financial components and even how to think about money in terms of those life moments. And I talk about the unexpected events, the planned events, and then those aha moments, and how do you navigate those with confidence and with some direction there. So the book is really designed to be read before you get into action, so that when you do get into action, you have a greater potential to really do what it is you want to do and achieve the results you want.
I love it. I can't wait to check it out because it sounds really cool. Is this more consumer focused, or is it more for the financial professional, or is it both?
Well, it's definitely written for the consumer. However, I have a lot of financial advisors and people in the financial arena that share this book with their clients because it breaches them in a different way, and it allows them to have some different conversations with them. There is a chapter in the book about finding your money mentor and how to go about doing that and find the right person to work with. And so I know a lot of advisors have told me that when they read that chapter, they recognize that they could do a better job perhaps at really positioning themselves as being more of that money mentor and doing some of the work that needs to be done to allow clients to see them differently. And I do think there's an important part of our of the financial industry that we need to take a look at as advisors and planners ourselves. I do think we have a little bit of an image problem. And so I think going through a chapter like that and really understanding that money is more than math will go a long way towards us trying to address the image problem that we have right now.
Yeah, let's talk about that image problem because it's real. I mean, we are looked at lower than the one I usually hear at conferences is less than used car salesmen. And no offense to used car salesmen, but you understand the idea. Where did that come from? Why is that so prevalent? And how do we overcome that perception? Because we're helping people. That's truly the idea here. But where did that come about? Do you have, Andy, do you have an idea of where that really came from?
Well, I think it kind of goes back to basic marketing. You know, in order to be able to sell somebody something, you have to identify a need, which is how kind of needs planning really evolved back in the 70s and the 80s. And so we told people they needed a product that we might have to sell. And then we started to pitch them sales ideas and concepts. And it's still largely touted today. You know, you'll go to a conference or a financial meeting and it's all about sales idea and concepts. And we're kind of pitching these ideas to the audience. And, you know, we're pitching and repenting. And I think that when that happens, you know, clients hear the sales pitch and they're not able to really attach themselves to, you know, this, I'm having some problems over here and you're pitching me with this idea rather than truly taking the time to get to understand me and what I want to accomplish and how I think and how I feel about my situation. And so one of the things I think we could do to rectify our image problem is to stop pitching ideas and concepts to people just to sell something. Instead, we need to be more inquisitive. We need to be more curious and really get to understand who our clients are at the core and how their thinking works and how their behavior around money is manifesting, so that we can really provide them with good habits and techniques and things to be thinking about. And certainly products will help them get to where they need to be. There's some great financial products and companies out there. And I'm all about, you know, using those products to help a client achieve their goals. But I'm more about understanding what it is that's important about the client and how I can help them. And then finding the right product to fit that rather than finding having a product that I'm trying to shove into whatever situation they happen to find themselves in. I think consumers are smarter today than they maybe were in the past. And that goes, it's kind of a byproduct, I guess, of having more information on hand. And so consumers can smell that sales pitch a mile away. And I think that they are turned off by it. and they're finding that, you know, they can do some things maybe themselves or think they can. You know, one big piece of evidence to support this is look at how financial influencers are making waves out there with consumers. You know, financial influencers, we typically in the industry might think of somebody like a Dave Ramsey or Susie Orman, but there's a lot of financial influencers that are younger that are really captivating social media right now and building a following of millions of people that are listening to them for financial advice. And yet many of these influencers have no credentials in the area of finance. They're just, you know, touting good ideas, and they're great marketers, and they know how to network and build a great, cool technology stack, but they may not be able to give the kind of right advice. And so I think it's important to recognize that the reason that consumers are so attracted to that is because they don't feel like they're getting that same sense of support and being heard in the financial planning community like we should be, you know, doing when we work with people.
Yeah, it's a big task, obviously. And really what I'm hearing is we need to continue to care more about our clients. It's not just transactional. We are relational. And just based on our early conversation, it's like, I imagine when you work with a client, it's not a client for like this transaction. You have a client for life. Is that kind of a philosophy that I'm heaping on you, I guess, but it seems like your philosophy, that's where it goes to.
Absolutely. I think that there's so many different decisions that people will make throughout their lifetime. You know, we make 5 or 6 financial decisions a day. You know, something as simple as, you know, am I buying the pumpkin spice latte, or am I, you know, drinking the coffee back at the house or at your job, or, you know, you're walking to work, you're taking an Uber. We have all these little micro financial decisions we're making each and every day. So money is definitely a part of all of our lives all the time. And so when I work with a client, for me, it's really important that they understand that I'm going to be with them on their journey, that I'm not just helping them in this split moment, but that I'm going to be able to go with them and carry them forward as, you know, as they make many, many hundreds of decisions over their lifetime. And I think that allows me to get to know them a lot better. And the more you know them and you know who they are as people and what they want to accomplish and what their issues and concerns are, you're able to guide them and be their advocate and be able to give them advice because you do understand who they are and what they want to accomplish. And that certainly bodes well for a long-lasting relationship. I think this transactional business is going to be something that, if we're not careful, could really shift our industry to where, you know, anybody can make a transactional loan just as easy as they can with an advisor. And what people really need and want from the financial planning community is advice and guidance. It's not about a transaction. And so the more that we can start to adjust how we interact with clients to fit that mold, I think that we'll be able to help them. And by the way, clients definitely need our advice. You know, there's so much that goes into it, especially as you start to enter into retirement, as you start to experience death and illness and how to handle financial products inside of those situations. There's a lot of advice that people really need that they can't get through the interaction online. And so I think it's important that they find an advisor that they trust, that they can have, you know, real conversations with that can guide them on that path.
Yeah. So logistically speaking, I'm just curious, do you set it up where I'm going to be meeting with you once a year, or is it call me whenever you need to? What is kind of your best thought and advice for younger advisors out there on how to work with their clients? Because I think at least yearly is kind of a minimum, but I'm just curious how you would kind of set up your practice.
Well, when I bring on a new client, I like to meet with them 6 months after we kind of go through that initial planning phase. You know, there's a lot that we're going to be doing initially together. We may be meeting 4 to 6 times in the beginning as we're starting to kind of get to, you know, all their data and understand who they are and put some things in action. And I want them to kind of be with that for a few months. And then we can have a conversation, you know, 6 months down the line to see how they're doing, how they're feeling about what's happening, where their comfort level is. And it may be that we need to slow some things up, or maybe we can start to add in what are the next things that were on the list that we wanted to do together. And so I think it's a great time just to check in with them. Certainly every year I think is important. I really believe in the philosophy of it's better to have 30 one-year plans than to have one 30-year plan. Because things change and people need us to update things as they go throughout their life. Having said all of that, I think it's important to ask the client how often they want to meet with you. Some clients may say, don't bother me, but once a year, I'm good with that. Whereas others may want to hear from you once a quarter. And, you know, even if it's a phone call or a Zoom meeting or an email, something. And so I think that, you know, whenever I talk to a client and I'm considering adding them into my practice, I like to ask them, you know, how frequently would you like to communicate with me and under what terms would that work for you? So that I understand where their thinking is. It's not just about what I want. It's also about what they want.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I love what you said, 31-year plans versus one 30-year plan. That's such an important, because as you said, you know, divorce, marriage, kids, buying homes. I mean, so much happens in that time period. I think that's a really good way. I hope you guys heard that one, because that's really key. You had mentioned five major financial components in the book, and I don't want to give the book away. People will definitely go check it out. But what are those five components that you're talking about?
The first one is cash flow. And this one is really important, because I think a lot of times when we're talking with clients, we don't spend enough time on cash flow. We kind of don't want to maybe get into that budgeting or developing a spending plan with somebody. But I think cash flow is where it really starts to matter to people. If you're spending everything you're taking in, there is no room to be able to create wealth. The wealth is created in the in-between, the inflows and the outflows. And so I think it's really important that we have that discussion about cash flow with people, and talk with them about spending money, especially if they're early in their career and they're going to be getting pay increases over time and making more money. We need to talk with them about how do you make sure that your spending doesn't increase at that same rate, that you're able to set money aside to be able to build wealth for yourself. The second component is protection. I do believe protection first planning is critical, because you can't go back and fix a mistake in the area of protection after the fact. So I think that's critical. And then we have savings, growth. And then the last one is debt, which is something that certainly plagues a lot of Americans and people throughout the world. But it's definitely in our country, we have a lot of people that are dealing with a lot of debt, and managing that is not only important for their financial well-being, but also important for their mental well-being as well. I think debt creates a lot of shame and a lot of other emotions that we sometimes don't really acknowledge in terms of the impact that it has to their overall planning.
That is interesting. And shame is a real thing. And it's this idea that money creates it, but it does, because now they start to question their decisions and there's so much there. I want to get into leadership a little bit, because again, the Gold Stevie Award, that's a big deal, you guys. That's a really cool award. Can you talk about the experience of not only winning that, but what that meant and being the award winner? That's pretty darn cool.
Well, you know, it was a lot of fun. The Stevie Awards event was in New York City, downtown. I think it was at the Marriott. And, you know, I went to the event just because I wanted to go. There are women there from all over the world, so they give a lot of different awards in a lot of different categories. And so I just wanted to be in the room with, you know, 1,000 so other amazing women from all over the world. I knew I was nominated, but had no indication or thought that I was going to win this award. Didn't even register on my radar at all. And so certainly it was a surprise to win. And it was a lot of fun to be able to kind of go up there. And, you know, they want you to give a minute or two speech. And so, you know, figuring out what to say as you're walking up there was kind of my dilemma for the night. But it was an exciting event. I'm certainly still part of the Stevie Awards, the women in business area. I'm going to be moderating a panel for their Women in Future conference next week. And so it gives me an opportunity to kind of extend leadership in different ways. And so I'm moderating a panel of three other amazing women. And we're going to be talking about, you know, financial matters and relationship to money. And so I think that being a leader, though, isn't just about managing people. It's also about taking a stand for the things that you're passionate about and that you believe in. It's being a leader in your family, in your community, in your organization, being a leader, you know, in a lot of different areas of your life, and not just in one area of your life. It's about being willing to, you know, say the tough things and do the hard things sometimes.
So obviously you mentioned the growth since 93 with females, and as I told you, we represent almost 50% in our company is male, female, which is cool. When it comes to recruiting somebody into the business, because again, your father brought you in at a young age and that was your recruitment experience, I guess. What are you seeing out there? What's kind of the best way to approach some of these younger females that maybe didn't think about, hey, a financial career can be really rewarding, super fulfilling. Do you have some real tangible takeaways and advice on how to do it properly?
Well, I think first and foremost, we need to be very transparent and clear if you're trying to talk with somebody about joining the financial industry about what the opportunity is, but what the challenges are. You know, this is similar to building a law practice or building a medical practice. You're going to spend the first few years finding people to talk to and building your practice, and it's going to be long hours and hard work. And I think we shouldn't shy away from that. I think sometimes we tell people, you know, you can kind of work when you want and you can do what you want. And I don't think that's realistic. I mean, you can do that, but you're not going to build the kind of practice that most people want to have by doing that. So I think being really clear with them about what this is about, but also talking with them about the opportunity that once you start to build a practice, you can adjust when and how you work, however you want to do. You can be creative. Certainly, the pandemic has taught us that virtual meetings work. People can work wherever they want. I've been touting work where you win for years, and I'm really glad that everybody's figured out that, yeah, people can be productive when they work from home if they love what they do and they're dedicated to what they do. And so I think that you can design this career to be whatever you want it to be. You can work with the type of people that you want to work with. You can help people and you can guide them. And so I think sharing that message, certainly with young people and women, is important. Making sure that you're focusing on the helping people and partnering with people, not selling something. I think that's also critical, because what we see is that most young people and women want to, you know, do something that gives them purpose in their life. They don't want to just be a salesman. And so I think we have to make a shift there. And certainly there is unlimited income opportunities, but you also have to invest in your business because it is your business. So you're not an employee. You need to think of yourself as an entrepreneur. And when you do that, you will do the things that you need to do as an entrepreneur would. So if you want to go and take a class and get some more education, then you pay for it and you take the class. It shouldn't be about what is my company giving me. It should be about, I'm taking ownership of my future. This is my business. And I'm going to build my business so that I can help my clients. And then the companies are there to support us in that role, not to do it for us or to give it to us.
Yeah, I love what you said about the perspective. And anybody that's been in this industry for, you know, at least a decade, they all say the same thing. You are going to bust your butt in the beginning. And then, like you said, you can start to pick and choose your schedule a little bit more because you got better at your job, essentially, is what happened. Have we become soft as an industry? It's a question. I'm just curious because we talk about this behind closed doors a lot. Have we become soft on these newer people coming through the doors?
Well, I think it's also about recognizing that people, you know, work with people differently. You know, when I started in the industry, and you may have even experienced this too, we had to fill out our, you know, a list of all the people we knew. And those are the people that we were going to go and talk to. And it makes sense. You know, those are the people that we have a relationship with, that we may have a friendship with or know. So we want to go and tell them about this new career path that we've embarked on and how we can help them. But what I found, and especially in writing my book and in all my research through the years, is our friends and family don't always want to work with us. And it's not because they don't like us or they don't, it's just they don't want us to know maybe their intimate financial, you know, interactions and what's going on, whether it's good or bad. And they want us to be friends or family, not to go to that level of understanding their financial situation. And so I think that we have probably, you know, need to shift how we look at that. And instead of going to our friends and family and saying, work with me, I'm new in the business, let me, you know, be my guinea pig here. We need to go to our friends and family and say, I'm building a business. This is the type of people that I want to work with. These are the types of people that I think could benefit from what I do. Who do you know in your network or your influence that you could introduce me to. I'm not going to, you know, try to sell them something. I just want to meet as many people as possible so that if and when they're in search for somebody to give them financial advice, maybe they'll at least have a name or a face that they will identify with that they'll reach out to and call on. And so if we start to kind of build our business like we build our social networks, I think we'll end up doing better that way than if we try to just go after the people that we know very, very well and expect them to open up their, you know, financial world to us and share their most intimate money details. I think that's a really hard ask now. And so I think we have to upgrade how we teach people to be in this business. We can't keep recycling the things that we did 20 years ago. And yet that seems to be commonplace. Even, you know, the conferences I've attended, even this year, virtually and in person before we got shut down, you know, I could close my eyes and I'd be transported back to the 90s. And we were saying the same things and expecting the same results. And I think that's why we've struggled a little bit. We have to be more innovative. We have to encourage innovation and expansion of how we work with people and under what terms in order for us to be able to help those young people get into the business. So, you know, I don't think we need to be hard on them and micromanage them, but I think we need to say, this is an opportunity. You need to think of yourself as an entrepreneur. What would an entrepreneur do? And if you've got to stay on top of them, they're not an entrepreneur, they're an employee, and maybe there's another job or role that would be better fit for them.
Yeah, throughout, one of the common themes that's come up is you pick and choose who you work with. That you've said that several times. Is that something that you did straight away, or is that something you learned over time?
Definitely learned that over time. I think in the beginning, you're like, you know, it's like, do they have a pulse? And then, you know, then they're a prospect. But what you learn is that you can spin your wheels a lot with people who, you know, will want to just pump you for information and they have no intention of doing business with you, or people who are not serious about their financial, you know, journey. And they'll, you know, they say they are, but they aren't. I think that what I learned is diving into the people's behavior and their money stories and their, you know, what's really important to them lets me learn a lot about them in terms of whether they're really taking this seriously or not. You know, we've all sat down, if you're an advisor in this business, you've sat down with somebody who says, I want to get focused on my money. I want to start saving money. I have these goals. And then when you tell them what they need to do, all of a sudden that you don't hear from them or they don't want to take action. And so I think finding that out early on by asking really great questions and paying attention to what their past behavior has been, not just asking them, but look at what they've done in the past. That can be a great indicator as to where the challenges might be for them, and ask them to hold them accountable. You know, I like to ask people, you know, when you get stumped or when you think you're going to be going off track, or, you know, what will your behavior look like? And do I have permission to call you out on that? Because that's important. If I see that happening, I need to know that they're okay with me saying, hey, hold up, let's take a time out. This is what you're doing, yet this is what you said to me. There's an, you know, there's not an alignment here. Let's get back to where we need to be so that I can continue to be the person that's an advocate for you to get to where you said you wanted to go.
One of the things you also continue to say is ask great questions. And as an author, obviously, finally or financially, you're going to have to explain that one a little bit. Obviously, that would be a good one to start with. But what other books and resources helped you develop some of these questions? Because I'm sure a lot of it was the School of Hard Knocks, as any of us that started in this business. But I'm sure there were resources that you, and books is where I always go to. Are there some that come on the top of your head where you're like, you guys should read this? It would be really impactful to your career.
You know, I read a lot and study a lot. I love learning. I think I'm a chronic learner. I'm always taking another designation or another course to try to expand my knowledge. I read a lot of books on coaching. I think that helped me a lot to understand how to ask better questions and why those questions were important. You know, what are the real nuances between open-ended questions and closed-ended questions, and how to get people to open up and what the expectation is. I read a lot about behavior. I'm fascinated with human behavior. Probably could have been a psychologist of some sort. I just love, you know, understanding how people think and what they do. I also read a lot about books outside of our industry. So I'll read a lot about entrepreneurialism. I read a lot about leadership. I've been listening to a great book called, I think it's about lying and about detecting when somebody's lying to you. And it's written by a CIA agent. And so I like to read all kinds of things. And every time I read a book, I read a lot of nonfiction. I try to think of, you know, what can I take from this and put it into practice in some way in what I do every day. And so I think reading financial books is great, but I spend a lot of time reading other types of books, mainly around human behavior and understanding how people think and how people behave. And that's really helped me more than some of the other financial books that I've read.
Yeah, knowing how they tick is clearly that's a big part of what we do, and certainly how we can help them the most. Early, over 27 years, you had to have had some failures. I see all the accolades and all the awards. My question is, what's your best advice when it comes to dealing with failure? What is your process of dealing when you planned on doing one thing and it just didn't work? What's your process?
Well, I think first of all, you know, we have to recognize that failing allows you to learn. You know, when you fail or when you don't accomplish what you set out to accomplish, that doesn't mean you didn't learn anything. Some of the most powerful things that I've learned in my life have come through, you know, being knocked down or going through a period of things not working out maybe like I wanted them to. And what I always do is say, what's the lesson here? You know, a lesson is repeated until it's learned. And we have to figure out what the lesson is instead of looking at how did I fail? What was the lesson here? And how can I use that to propel me forward? And we need to encourage people to fail more often and more frequently and not make them feel like they need to apologize for failing, because failing is where we really do learn. We learn a lot about ourselves. We learn a lot about other people, and we allow ourselves to build up resiliency and to be able to get back up. And that creates strength and courage and, you know, persistence over time. And so I think it's important for us in our role throughout our day-to-day lives as leaders, we need to encourage people to try new things and learn lessons and fail forward and fail fast and fail often.
I love that. Fail forward, fail fast, fail often, you guys. Absolutely. Andy, if you could step into my shoes, what would you ask yourself that I didn't?
Well, I think the biggest thing here is just recognizing that what we do is really important. You know, when people ask me, why do I do what I do? The reason is because when I'm in a meeting with a client or a prospective client, and they're sharing with me some of their most intimate feelings. You know, I was with a couple a week or so ago, and the man there started to tear up and really talk about, you know, where they were financially. And money is an intimate subject. And so when you ask me why I do what we do, I do that because I want people to know that there are people like myself and you and others that are out there that can really partner with them to be able to be good stewards with their money, for money to be able to fulfill what they want, and to be able to guide them with honesty and transparency and clarity, to allow them to feel good about their situation. And so I'm very passionate about that and understanding and helping people. And so I think, I guess the one question is why do I do what I do? And it's because I really feel like that what we do makes a profound difference, not just in the lives of the people that we're talking to across the table or through the screen, but also the lives of the other generations that we're going to be impacting as a result of that initial relationship. And so what we do makes a difference. We serve a purpose, and we should not forget how meaningful that can be to not only the people in our lives, but the people that we touch and help along the way.
Yeah, it's a great way to look at that. It's not just the person in front of you. And like you said, even caught yourself, it's over the screen now. It's so different than it used to be. But it's the people coming down the line. It's the generations that you're really helping. So yeah. Where can our listeners connect with you online?
They can certainly go to andefrazier.com, andefrazier.com. They can buy my book. I'm on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple Book, you know, all the major booksellers there. They can connect with me on social media. If you search Andy Frazier, I have, you know, personal social media, but I also have my professional public figure type of sites as well. So definitely reach out and connect with me. I love meeting people. And I love, you know, hearing about different people's stories. I spend a lot of time, you know, mentoring and coaching other people because I really appreciated those that mentored and coached me along the way. And so definitely reach out to me on social or through my website and certainly read my book. I would love it if you would do that.
Yeah, we will absolutely link that in the show notes, guys. I can't wait to read it. As you guys know, I'm a voracious reader. It's one of my favorite things to do. This sounds awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time, dropping so many amazing nuggets. I have a page full of notes for sure. And I just really appreciate you being here and everything that you've done for the financial service industry over the last 27 some odd years. My goodness.
Yeah, I know. I like to tell people I started when I was 10.
Well, you look fantastic. So you are doing great work. Thank you. And Andy, excuse me. I got that down. Andy, thank you.
Andy, so you got it right. You're right. Well, thank you for having me.
All right, you guys, definitely go check her out. Check out the book. I think you're going to get a ton of value out of it. And until next time, continue getting better every day. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you for listening. If this content is delivering value to you, please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review us. Our goal is to help a lot of people create life-changing wealth and get better every day. For more information or comments, please reach me at jryerson@appreciationfinancial.com or connect with me on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Let's Go Win 365. Keep growing, and we'll see you next time.
This is the Protect, Help, Give Show with JM Ryerson.